I'm Casper Van Dien.
Hi, I'm Cynthia Rothrock.
Hi, I'm Christos Gate.
Hey, this is writer Fred Van Lente.
Hi, this is Ruth Fletcher Gate.
I'm Barry Gregory.
Hi, this is Derek Donovan. And
this is Victor Dandridge.
Hey, this is Kevin Sorbo here, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. And really, do some thinking, seriously.
We're on the road, we're going home to the place where wild nerds roam with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our escape. It's like Mecca for geeks in a star-filled sky where you can meet all your heroes and none of them.
Hey man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. Comics talk for comics fans.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Thinking Outside the Long Box. My name is Tom Strange. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, we're on episode 48. Does that sound right to everybody?
Sounds
Let's
like a
say
number.
48.
That's pretty close to other numbers.
Thanks. And we're going to be talking about the demon Etrigan today. But first, let's say hi to everybody. Josh, how are you doing today?
I am doing fairly well, thanks.
And what's the drink of choice today?
I am drinking a beer called the Tennessee Prince. It's a Belgian quad that's been aged in whiskey barrels.
Well, that sounds lovely. LT, how are you doing and what are you drinking?
I am drinking a Half Bullock. That is the cheapest whiskey you've got in your house with one spherical ice cube in it. And I think it is wonderful that we are choosing the demon to take us out of 2016 on.
An excellent point. Mike Manning down in Memphis, Tennessee. How you doing and what are you drinking?
First, I'm in New Orleans, Louisiana, not Memphis, Tennessee. But I'm doing excellent and I'm only two sips away from having a buzz.
Ooh, let's get two sips down. I must be a little drunk because I knew you were in New Orleans. I used to live in Memphis. I must be crazy. As I alluded to earlier, we are going to be talking about the demon Etrigan. And to give us a rhyming synopsis of this character is our own Joshua Opper. Joshua, take it.
Kirby summoned him from the depths of hell, a story of Merlin, Morgan, and magic, the history of which is quite awfully tragic. The demon is bound to the mortal shell of Jason Blood, who's a magician as well. His own comic he's had and appeared when they ran in Swamp Thing, Green Arrow, The Bat, and Sandman. He assists the heroes of DC fighting for good with super strength, hellfire, cape, and hood, and transforming every time he should yell, "Gone, gone, form of man, rise the demon Etrigan."
Oh, I totally want to shit on your poem, but that was terrific! I had this great rebuttal, but that was really good.
I think you have to do the background every episode as Etrigan.
That seems great. Like an awful lot of work.
That seems like an awful lot of work.
It's about time he does some work.
All right, so why did we have to do that in rhyme scheme there, Josh?
Well, Etrigan, through most of his comic career, is always rhyming generally just about as poorly as I just did. So the little poem that he speaks either returns him to the form of Jason Blood or summons and bonds the demon Etrigan and brings him into the mortal plane.
And why does he rhyme?
He rhymes when he got a promotion in hell as another hell tried to invade hell, I think.
Something like that, yeah. I'll tell you what, if we have to do Zatanna, we'll do it backwards.
So that way no one will understand us?
Yeah, I'll have Lainey read it, because she can probably read it as fast. My wife, fairly genius-level IQ, she can probably read it backwards faster than most people can read it forwards. So I'll just have her come in here and do that for us.
You mean actually saying the words themselves backwards, or just the sentences backwards?
The whole thing backwards.
It's okay, not easy. That's why it's magic.
That's why it's just because it's magic doesn't mean it's easy. A couple other things about Etrigan and Kirby. Josh, do you remember why Kirby had to do this particular character?
I know he wasn't thrilled about it. He was working on another title, and he really didn't expect it to go anywhere or be very popular. But I think horror comics were starting to come up, and DC wanted to explore it. And he basically got shuttled off, and then it sort of did get popular, and he had to sort of set aside what he wanted to work on. instead work on Etrigan.
That's right. Horror comics were very popular at the time. DC wanted a horror comic, and Kirby was really kind of mad that this did as well as it did.
Well, do you know why the horror comics got suddenly popular in 1971 and 72?
Well, I do, but why don't you tell all our guests who aren't as familiar with the Comics Code of Authority as I am?
That's right. The Comics Code of Authority prohibited comic books from having vampires, demons, or werewolves, or any other kind of supernatural creatures. But they decided to lift the ban in 1971, which is why you see the rise of Ghost Rider, Son of Satan, and the Demon.
The rise of Etrigan. Josh, might as well start with you. What's your favorite Etrigan storyline?
I don't really have a storyline. I like the whole second series. So the 72 series was pretty short-lived. And then he had a second one that started in the early 90s, and that went on for about 5 years, I think. And I really just enjoyed that whole series. It's one of the things that pulled me into DC Comics and then sort of introduced me into the books of magic and the whole mystical part of DC. And since I don't really read a lot of the hero parts, I like Heroes in Space and DC and the magic stuff. Those are really where I read DC.
Excellent. And Mike, what's your favorite part?
I'm going to go with the Demon Knight series from the New 52 back in 2012, I believe. They had a book that contained a team. It was like the Seven Samurai, but in this case it was seven medieval characters who were fighting against the rising darkness. And Etrigan / Jason Blood was one of them, Madame Xanadu, the Shining Knight. They had an Amazon in there, an Arabic gentleman named Al-Jabbar, and a few others like Vandal Savage, etc. It was very – I liked it a lot. If you are a fan of Dungeons & Dragons and you want to check out an Etrigan story, you might want to check that out.
I will check that one out. I still have to read the Book of Magic. Everyone tells me I'm going to love that too. I guess that brings me to me then. I wasn't a huge fan of the demon Etrigan, and I found him way later. But there is a storyline that he kind of appears in. Do you guys know about the mythical gun, the Ace of Winchesters?
No.
Now, all right. Well, this is like one of my favorite mythical things that John Constantine comes across. And it's a rifle that was forged during the Old West. The metal is made out of an angel's halo. The trigger is a demon's tooth. It has the bones of saints are incorporated into the whole thing. And it's one of the few things on Earth that can be wielded by people that can absolutely, totally, outright destroy a demon. So it's a very highly prized object because it's very hard to kill a demon. And Etrigan plays in Hellblazer issue 76 is the first appearance of this rifle. And Etrigan is part of the storyline trying to find the rifle to destroy his own demon because he's just had a child. So he's thinking that maybe he can kill off Etrigan, who's become more and more powerful over the years, without killing himself, if he gets someone to shoot the demon part of himself. Most notably, he's trying to get Tommy Monahan, who is a metahuman hitman, to wield the gun. A lot of horrible things happen and ensue. I won't ruin the storyline, but it's a great storyline. It starts in Hellblazer 76. The last time the gun is seen is Hitman issue 20. Did anyone read Hitman?
No,
I guess not. Yeah, I never did either. So I missed the last appearance of this rifle. I might actually buy the comic book just because I like this artifact so much. Was that everybody? I guess that was kind of a quick run through.
I think you're forgetting someone, Tom.
Am I forgetting you, Tommy?
Exactly.
Tommy, why don't you tell me what you liked about Etrigan?
So, knowing that I don't have a very big DC background, I did not really read any of the Etrigan storylines before, but I really like Garth Ennis's work, so I I went and I bought some of the old Garth Ennis Demon series. I brought the Demon Volume 2 Longest Day collection that reprinted the Demon 50 to 58. From 1993 to 95, and it had several stories in it. The first one was a little slow, but the remaining stories in that book were great. The one that I liked the best was the retelling of the origin of how Jason Blood and Etrigan got bound together by Merlin. And in that story, Etrigan was trying to do the same thing to Jason Blood's child. Jason Blood was about to have a child with an ex-girlfriend of his, and Etrigan fathered a demon and was trying to bind it to the newborn Jason Blood's child, and it was a really great, well-done story that I really liked. And in this series, in one of the later stories, I realized that I knew exactly why both Tom and Josh would love the demon, because in a later story, Etrigan was defending Hell from a group of angels who decided to try to take over Hell because Lucifer was gone and they wanted the crown of thorns. And in it, Etrigan at the beginning was just kind of depressed and bored out of his mind, and he was just sitting around watching TV, and he happened to be watching an episode of Blossom, which Josh loved, and they brought up a social issue, and from the TV was Blossom saying, I know, Blossom's dad saying, I know it's not easy to do the right thing, Blossom, but shooting heroin is wrong. So it had a subtle anti-drug message, being socially conscious as well.
Well, you know I love being socially conscious, and I'm anti-drug. Why was Blossom almost shooting heroin?
I have no
almost,
idea.
Almost, Tom. Almost.
It wasn't almost.
Almost.
I definitely
Wait,
got the opinion
of Blossom
it was not almost.
Shooting.
I'm going
to have to look up what...
Right?
Blossom shooting her. Okay, fine. Yeah. It's a comic book.
It's hiding
it. Comic book.
Look, sometimes when you're watching Blossom in Hell, the episodes get distorted a little bit, apparently.
Yeah, it's bad reception.
Yeah.
Circling back to Tom.
It meant to say eating cookies.
Eating cookies. Circle back to Tom a little bit here. It's been there's a similar weapon to the Ace of Winchester's on the TV show Supernatural called The Cult.
And yes, and it was actually probably inspired by that gun.
Yeah, Eric Kripke, the writer of the show, is a Hellblazer fan, and the main character's last name is Winchester. Sam and Dean.
Oh, you know, I didn't make that particular connection, but that's awesome. Also, the angel that's in the Supernatural series, he says that he made him look a little bit like Constantine in the comic books on purpose because he wanted him to have that kind of gritty feel. So we know he read Constantine. We know he read Hellblazer. Yeah. By the way, did anyone like the Brave and the Bold cartoon that Etrigan was in? I thought that was a really good cartoon, too.
Yeah, I like the Brave and the Bold series.
Do you like that particular cartoon? I thought it was good.
I was going to say, previously, the only time that I had been exposed to Etrigan was on Justice League Unlimited and Brave and the Bold. And I liked both of those episodes with Jason Blood and Etrigan on them.
Oh, I think I missed the one where he was in Justice League. What happened in that one?
I believe it was an episode where all the Justice League were turned into children by Morgan Le Fay's child. I can't remember his name right now.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Was that Clarion the Witch Boy?
I think it was Clarion the Witch Boy who did that, but... Oh, no, it was Morgan Le Fay's kid, because he became all powerful. Yeah, but now I remember
Batman,
little baby Etrigan.
And I believe Batman called in Jason Blood in that episode.
Yeah, who was immediately turned into an infant and had to be caught. I thought it was a good episode. All right, I'm going to tell you what my socially relevant issue is today. I have a friend who is absolutely non-binary, which means this person does not think of themselves either as male or female. And the preferred pronoun they like to use is they or them. So, you know, when you're saying, you know, they or them, you never say he or she. You say they or them. Or you can just say Owen. Owen's a good friend of mine. I work with Owen. And I asked Owen today, you know, are you a comic book fan? And are there any non-binary comic book characters that you really identify and like? And I was expecting maybe Loki or some of the other, like, go-tos that we've talked about before. And to my surprise, Owen says Swamp Thing. As a non-binary character. And it never occurred to me as Swamp Thing is non-binary because Swamp Thing, the origin story has Swamp Thing as a male, a doctor. But Owen's argument, and I think it's a good one, is that Swamp Thing, now being an elemental and a force of nature, is beyond male or female. There's no real reason to put any kind of gender on the Swamp Thing, especially since... it would no longer be able to reproduce in any way other than probably the way a plant would. So today's socially relevant thing is me finding out that there are more non-binary gender superheroes out there than I originally thought. And it was great. It's very hard to find someone who is both non-binary and a comic book fan. I've only have a few non-binary friends, and this is the first one who was also a comic book nerd. So a unique perspective for me this week. Anyone have anything to add to that? It was interesting to find out who Owen kind of saw as a reflection of his non-binary self in a comic book.
I don't read Swamp Thing, but do we see Swamp Thing making gender decisions in the comic? Saving women over men?
No.
Yes and no.
Originally, okay. He thought he was Alex Holland, but then later on in Alan Moore's run, early on, he discovered that he was not Alex Holland. He just he was a plant that absorbed the memories of Alex Holland. So originally, he was attracted to the woman that he had been attracted to as Alex Holland, but as he grew to identify himself, he kind of let that love go.
So he evolved into more of a gender neutral character.
Yes, and if you're one of our fans, and I am not an expert on Swamp Thing, and you'd like to correct us on that, you can write to luckybastard@outsidethelongbox.com and correct us.
We do enjoy being corrected, believe it or not, because it furthers our knowledge in the area.
So,
by we, he means everybody but Tom.
On a similar vein, in the Marvel Universe, Groot always seemed kind of gender neutral to me. I mean, he is Groot, or she is Groot, or it is Groot.
Or they.
Or they.
Or they. It would be they if it's not binary. Yeah, I have to think about Groot a little bit. And look into it a little bit more. And while we're doing that, let's take a look at the back of the long box. Tommy, what do you got at the back of the long box?
I have Tech Jacket. Volume 1, The Boy from Earth. This was done by Robert Kirkman back in 2007. Robert Kirkman, of course, is of Walking Dead fame. The Volume 1 collected the first 6 issues of the Tech Jacket comic, and Tech Jacket is basically, it's a suit of kind of alien armor that this young high school child kind of is forced upon him when an alien spaceship lands on Earth, and it's about to blow itself up so that it doesn't interfere with the Earthlings. And the alien is wearing this armor, and he decides that his legacy, his last dying thing, he does not want to be the death of this child that just stumbled upon his crash. So he transfers the armor to the child, and it's bonded with the child until he dies, pretty much. And because of it, this this high school student has, you know, all sorts of fantastical powers. He has shoot laser beams, super strength, can fly, et cetera, and so forth. And he's drawn into a war with helping out the Geldarians, who created the tech jacket armor, defeat this group of aliens that was trying to kill them. And it's a pretty straightforward story. It would be pretty good for a younger reader who, you know, probably could identify with the high school student as a younger reader and such. This particular first six issues was pretty straightforward, not a lot of twists, not a lot of turns. And some of the later volumes, as the character evolves, I think the book gets a bit better. So that's my recommendation. It's available on Comixology Unlimited. So if you have Comixology Unlimited, you could read it for free. Other than that, it's a pretty reasonable price book.
All right, that sounds like one I'll try to look at. Mikey, what do you got the front of the long box?
At the front of the long box, I have the new Jessica Jones series. Now, this is a adult comic. It is not meant for children. It is, again, by the original creators of Jessica Jones, Brian Michael Bendis and Matt Hollingsworth. It is an excellent series. It picks up with Jessica Jones being taken or being released from jail and getting hired by a wife at her detective agency, Alias Investigations, to find out if her husband is insane or if he really is from an alternate timeline. At the same time, she keeps on getting approached by various superheroes asking her where the kid is, because apparently something has happened to the child and Luke Cage is trying to find out what it is. It's a good read. If you like the original Alias series, you will totally like Jessica Jones.
Well, I did like the original Alias series, so I will have to read this one. Excellent.
And
Josh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just want to stress to everybody, I know I've ranted about how good the Flintstones are previously, but I want to read you one thing from issue number 4 where they are talking about marriage. The whole issue centers around the cavemen don't feel monogamy is right, and it is a blasphemy against the cave people, and that people aren't meant to couple together. And Fred goes with Wilma on a couple's retreat, and they ask him how he feels about marriage, and he says this: marriage is like insurance. You only enter into a lifetime commitment because you're afraid of the future. But does being married mean she will love me forever, or is it just my attempt to keep her from finding someone better? Is marriage really just a sacred bond, or is it just an illusion of security? This is the best writing in comics, folks. If you are not reading the Flintstones, you should be. Sorry, I didn't mean to go. DC Comics.
Yeah, I have to agree. Mike put me onto the Flintstones, and the writing is super timely. It is amazingly well written. It's contemporary, and it really just tackles issue after issue in the comic while being still an entertaining storyline with some really good artwork. It's a top-notch book right now.
Yeah, but I've been married 20 years, and you just made me question everything.
And that's what the Flintstones will do for you. Make you laugh, and then it'll make you go, huh, really? But anyways, I didn't mean to go on a rant. That's Josh's job.
That's right. And for those Star Wars fans out there, Rogue One came out this week, and most of us saw it. And since one person didn't see it, we're not going to discuss it. But I'm going to ask people, what's your favorite spaceship, either in comics or movies or anywhere?
Serenity, hands down.
That's a tough one.
That's a tough one. I mean, there are a lot of great spaceships out there.
I mean, for me, it's kind of a tie between Battlestar Galactica and the spaceship Discovery from 2001. I mean, there's something to be said about a computer that goes mad. And there's also something to be said about an old battleship that's about to be put out to pasture that just kind of saves the humanity.
Are you talking about Battlestar Galactica or the Argo from Star Blazers?
I was talking about
to say the Yamato.
Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about Battlestar Galactica and like I said, the spaceship Discovery from 2001 Space Odyssey. But I suppose you could put the Argo. I mean, the Argo was a ship that had already been put out to pasture that they retrofitted and rebuilt and made into the ship that would save humanity.
Well, I guess mine would have to be the Yamato. Not only because I had the band, the Big Blue Yamato, which a lot of you guys have been part of over the years, but the Yamato was like the first spaceship that really caught my eye and my imagination. I love the Big Blue Yamato.
Right. Well, that is the Argo from Battlestar.
I know.
From Star Blazers. Yeah.
Yeah. But it will always be the Yamato in my mind.
That's fair. Yeah.
And Josh, you haven't said yours.
Yeah, I have. It's a tough one for me. I mean, I love the Falcon. Don't get me wrong. I love Slave One. I do love Serenity. But I also love the Nostromo from the Alien series. Mm. So I don't know if I can peg a favorite, and the Argo, of course. It's a tough category for me.
Let's not forget the call box, the police call box.
Absolutely, and
here's my tangent is pretty impressive.
On a tangent. This is my tangent on a tangent. Now that you've brought up the Yamato, so in the movie Pearl Harbor, they quoted the line, "I fear we have awakened a sleeping giant." As if it was a historical quote, but really it was a line from the dialogue from Tora, Tora, Tora. And that just seems like the death of a researcher. Like some guy on that staff just should have been put down for that.
Actually, I do believe that someone did say that in historical context also. You're sure?
Yeah.
All right. I will do a little research myself, and I'll get back to that.
The whole history of the world, no one has ever said that phrase except in the movie, Tora, Tora, Tora. I got your back, Josh.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. And thank you, everyone, for not busting into the Star Blazers song.
Actually, that quote was actually said by...
Out of space.
Do not space.
Leaving Mother Earth.
To save the human race.
Our Star Blazers.
Through all the fire and the smoke, we will never give up hope. Evil men with evil dreams, they can't destroy all our dreams. We must be strong and brave. Our home we have to save. If not, then in just 1 year, planet Earth will disappear.
Disappear.
Yeah.
So to our fan out there who... To our fan out there who asked us to do an episode called Once More with Feeling where we sing our entire episode, that's why we're not doing that.
That's why we're not doing that.
Because we like our fans, we love the Long Box Legion, and we would not subject you to 45 minutes of us singing.
Yeah.
Now, 2 minutes, we have no problem with.
Just so you know, Josh, that was said by a Japanese admiral, Isakuro Yamamoto. And it was repeated. It was repeated in the movie Tora, Tora, Tora.
I do not believe that.
It's one of those things that I've always believed, and a little bit of research, Wikipedia, and also a quick quote from the Wall Street Journal says that it's true. Naval Marshal General Isoroku Yamamoto first said in 1941 after the attack on Pearl Harbor. And it was quoted in Tora, Tora, Tora.
Oh, my God. Trump is starting to affect Josh. Yeah. Josh is actually starting to disbelieve facts.
The actual quote, it's a little different, though. I fear all we have done is to awaken a sleeping giant and fill him with a terrible resolve, was the actual quote. So they changed it a little bit in Tora, Tora, Tora.
Actually, he was probably speaking Japanese, so I don't think that's the actual quote.
Well, you want to take a stab at it there, Mike?
No, I'm saying he said it in Japanese, so that's not the actual quote. That's the actual translation of the quote. So Josh is still
historian,
right.
But Josh, you might still be right, because historian Gordon Prange from The Reluctant Admiral, who's done the definitive biography on Isoroku, believes it but can't find verification. So it's one of those things where the guy who did the actual bio on him says maybe it's iffy. It's probably iffy.
And it's in when I says I fear all we've done is waking a sleeping giant film until we resolve. If you actually look at the cliff, the note for that, the link to that is a dead link for that. So there's no backup for that on Wikipedia to a source.
Well, it's the screenwriter for Pearl Harbor is the source.
Yeah.
It should go to his LinkedIn page. I don't know why it's not.
No citation.
Well, like I said, as a history major and someone with a degree in history, the name Gordon Prange is a name I recognize as a good researcher. And if he says it's a little iffy, then it's probably a little iffy. But he's on the fence on it. And he did real research. Like, yeah, stuff we'll never do.
Like talk.
Oh, my God, Trump is affecting us all. We're starting to believe fake news.
We might be believing fake news. All right, well, you know one thing I do believe in 100%, and that is plugs. Anyone got any good plugs?
Yeah, I'd like to plug issue 5 of the Flintstones where they talk about fake news.
Wait, really? It wouldn't surprise me if they did.
Actually, I think it's episode or issue 6.
Well, I would like to plug our Twitter page, which is outside the long box, at the long box, guys. We were lucky enough to get a retweet by none other than Joey Ryan, King of Dong Style. I was wearing a sweatshirt of his Christmas sweatshirt at work, and I tagged him on it, and he was nice enough to repost that on his Facebook page, on his Twitter page, retweet, thank you. And we also got another retweet by Leva Bates, who's another great wrestler. So if you think our Outside the Long Box page is mostly comic books, we talk a little bit about wrestling here and there, too. So feel free to join in the conversation, everyone.
I would like to promote our contest for this month. We're giving away Supreme Power, one of the graphic novels with the Squadron Supreme reboot. So email luckybastard@outsidethelongbox.com. Tell us what you like about the podcast. Tell us what you don't like. Tell us never to sing again. You could be in the running to win a graphic novel this month. Also, I would like to plug IanLino.com.
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 I'm not saying it.
IanLino.com. IanLino.com. Purveyor of fine geeky things, including t-shirts, posters, glassware, stained glass prints. The list goes on and on.
Yes, I got a bunch of my Christmas presents for my geek friends from not only IanLino.com, but also NovelErotics.com. So you guys should be getting that in the mail soon. If you haven't checked out Novel Erotics, go ahead and check them out. It's a great company full of sex toys. We also had an interview with Anne, who is one of the owners of the company. We should also thank Kirby Crackle for providing us our geek rock music. You can go to KirbyCrackleMusic.com and check out their music, or you can get their stuff on Bandcamp and iTunes. Tonight's we're going to play 140 characters at the end of this podcast. We should also plug the New Orleans Wizard World Comic Con going on January 5th, 6th, and 7th in New Orleans. Come on by on Saturday to our panel called Don't Read That, which is at 3:30 in room 240, where we will be talking about the history of censorship in comics. And on Sunday at 11 o'clock in room 343, we are going to be doing the old standby horrible stereotypes. Everybody who comes is going to get a free comic because my wife wants some closet space.
And you live in New Orleans, so you can bring a whole lot.
Yes.
I'm going to be so sorry to miss that.
We'll be sorry not to have you there. Josh, did you plug anything?
Yeah, I wanted to plug Wizard World New Orleans. Wait. You got Mike coming.
We got that.
He got it. He got it all.
And Josh, you're going to be down.
And I am going to be there at the panel with Mike, Tom, and Josh. We'll all be sitting around talking about stuff at New Orleans Comic Con.
Hopefully we'll have our good friend Emily there. She's the femme fatale, the comics femme fatale, a terrific speaker on women's issues in comics. And maybe even another couple of surprise guests. You never know.
Yeah, that's we're right. Not going to name names.
The podcast
Nola
by
Nerd
name.
Couple.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nola Nerd Couple. We're not going to name you right off the bat.
If you mention the see us and mention the podcast by name, I will personally sign your ass with a Sharpie. Guaranteed.
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 I'm going to have to try to go the whole weekend without saying the podcast name.
I'm just going to hand out cards. And then when somebody says, what? What's this? And says it out loud, it'll be awesome.
Happy to help. Just happy to help.
Happy to help. All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for us this week. Josh, there was a guy here asking if this was your sector. I told him it probably wasn't, but is it?
I am absolutely certain this is not my sector.
And, Mike, what is this podcast to you?
It is like Drunk History, but for comics.
And don't forget what I always say. Don't spend time dissing what you hate. Just promote what you love. And LT, have a good night, man. I came across your program.